And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this episode, this broadcast, this segment of the Hagman & Hagman Report, where we break early and often, right? Joe took leave, as you can see. There's been a coup here in the office. Our very special guest, of course, is Mr. Jack Cashel, Cashel.com, the author of TWA 800, The Crash, the Cover-Up, and the Conspiracy. Folks, if you haven't done so already, go to Amazon.com, grab a hold of that book, but also grab a hold of Ron Brown's Body, also by Jack Cashel, folks, if you haven't done so. And you might think, well, wait a minute, what's the relevance of this, Ron Brown's Body? What's the relevance of this? What's the relevance of TWA 800? I mean, in the context of today's elections. This provides factual backdrop, in my view anyway, of the criminal conspiracy that surrounds the Clintons. And to understand what you're seeing today and understand it better, this is really a quick, provide you with a quick study to all things Clinton and the criminal cabal that we see in the continuing course of criminal conduct, which is a law enforcement term, or actually a legal phrase, I should say, for the sociopathic tendencies, in my view, what we're seeing behind the Clintons. So to my right is a good friend of the program, good friend of Jack Cashel, Mr. Anthony Privatera, and he's from Western New York, and he's joining us in this conversation. Before we bring you on, Mr. Privatera, and he had his debut in studio last June here. He's got quite a colorful and very interesting background, I'll say that. I learned some things about him this past week I didn't know. He's got some Hollywood connections. He's, oh, man.
Plus, he's a co-founder of our Lake Erie Cabal, you know, which we have.
That's right.
A secret meeting you attended last week.
Yeah, you know, to tell you what we had to go through to actually to be allowed on the grounds.
The vetting process.
It was brutal. It was brutal. And then what was with the black robes and the never mind. Now you watch. I'm going to get emails saying, hey.
And Vladimir Putin, of course, gave you authority to. Permission to come, because all report to Vladimir Putin now.
That's right.
At least, is that how you pronounce his name? I mean, he's our supreme leader. As Hillary told us.
We just refer to him as His Excellency.
So, Vlad.
Vlad, yeah. But, yeah, so if you want to finish up on Brown and really, this is just so fascinating, and it's, again, relevant, but.
I was explaining just before the break how this woman who is the liaison between Enron and the Croatian government, and the coordinator of this final trip for Ron Brown to Croatia, the fatal final trip, she is not interviewed. She's not listed. I have 22 volumes of interviews. She's not there. There's 175 people interviewed. The U.S. Air Force says this is the person we need to interview.
Right.
She's the one who decides at the last minute not to take the Enron plane, and she takes Ron Brown's. I mean, sorry, not to take Ron Brown's plane, but takes the Enron.
Just merely coincidental, or
I don't know. I presume it was. I mean, I'll give it a benefit of doubt and presume it's coincidental.
All right,
but it doesn't look good. It certainly deserves to be questioned, you know, because the Enron plane landed safely. It's one of a half dozen planes that landed in a half hour before Brown's plane crashed in the worst storm of the century, which is nonsense. But so she shows up at the wedding of Alexis Herman, who is the coordinator of that in Washington for the trip and labor secretary. And then she disappears. I try to call her. When I was doing the book, I called and I said, I'd like to talk to Zdenka. You know, I got her number in 5 minutes. Right? No one's ever talked to her before. I said, and I'm not going to lie to you, I said, I'm doing an investigation into Ron Brown plane crash. I talked to a secretary or something. She said, "Oh, I'm sure Zdenka will want to call you right back." Well, no, I still haven't. Zdenka, if you're listening, come on, give me a call sometime. You and the other people I've met, Jim Kallstrom, you know, we'll take your call too.
At least Buffalo's within striking distance
of us, exactly.
At the moment. So, okay.
So, that's and then she's pretty much disappeared from the scene. And
wow.
And I tried to contact her again this year, without any more success. There are limits to citizen journalism, and one of them is getting your phone calls answered. And that's why I go to place when the Brown book came out, when the 800 book came out. I go to New York Times. I go to Washington Post. I say, I need your help.
Right.
You make a few phone calls, you win a Pulitzer Prize, you know? You get a phone call from the New York Times, you're going to answer it, probably.
Even
if you're Jim Kallstrom. But if you're I could get so far with these kind of investigations, and then I could really use some help. And but they're not obviously interested because it's
right.
It does not suit their agenda.
Mm.
Now, if I were investigating George Bush, I mean, I'd it'd be
there's your end.
Yeah, right. Or whomever, you know.
Well,
Donald
yeah.
Trump. God.
Oh yeah, the flavor of the day there. Yeah. I gotcha. Yeah, well, and here it is, folks. Again, TWA 800, The Crash, The Cover Up, The Conspiracy, and Ron Brown's Body. Two linked books indeed. Yeah, it's at this point, too, and topical as well, relevant to today, folks. And we're gonna put one last plea out here. If you are out there listening and you have any information that would help Jack, that would help, unravel the conspiracy, unravel the cover up, expose the cover up, please send Jack Cashel an email, cashel.com, and follow the bouncing ball to the email there. So, or even email us if you want to, and we'll just forward it right to Jack at studio@hagmanandhagman.com. Jack, you're going to stay here as we talk to Mr. Privatera. Mr. Privatera is a gentleman that we've come to know, a good friend of the program. And a man who's got a very impressive resume. I don't know. You want to tell people about yourself? I mean, because you've done a lot of things.
Well, I was a science teacher at Silver Creek High School for 36 years.
Right.
And that was a great life. Met a lot of great young people. Still in contact with some and,
Have anybody have gone on to be like NASA rocket scientists or anything like that?
No, just surgeons. And I had one young man who probably one of the best students I ever had. I saw him after his first year of medical school.
Uh-huh.
You hear horror stories about medical school. He said, it wasn't all that hard.
Yeah, all right. That's
now he's a surgeon in Pittsburgh. And but it was a great life.
Cool.
And I loved, there were times where I really resented holidays coming up because things were going so well in school.
Yeah. Wow.
And of course, it was a different era, but it was, I'm sure things would be much tougher today.
Be a little bit more difficult to conform to the PC standards of today, I think, in the schools. But you also have a connection to Hollywood.
Well, 1991, I was watching Jay Leno. He was subbing for Johnny Carson on Tuesday evenings. They'd have a rerun on Monday. Jay would take over on Tuesday. And then Johnny would do three nights.
Right.
And 1991, I tell my wife, Sharon, you know, I can write the kind of stuff Leno uses. And, well, she says, yeah, well, okay. Go after it. And so back then, it was easy to contact people. You didn't have so many roadblocks to get to people.
Right.
And I contacted him by mail, started sending him some material. He sends back a little one-page contract to sign that anything that I send him has not been plagiarized from any other source or any other comedian. And then all of a sudden I get a check in the mail for joke material used. And,
so a joke writer for Jay Leno on The Tonight Show.
And so we went to fax machines. I was able to get material to him within a week on snail mail.
Sure.
And then we went to fax machines and then of course we went to emails. And, so for 23 years I had a career of, freelancing for Jay Leno.
Joe asked me to ask you this before the program. He said, please ask him. Is there any one, and I'm sorry for the diversion here. Is there any one joke that you're most proud of, that you look and you laugh?
It's a Bill Clinton joke.
Okay.
It was the first one that really thrilled me. Because I was watching, I think it was Matt Lauer interview Bill Clinton on the Today Show
uh-huh.
before I went to school. So this is about 7 o'clock, 7:15 in the morning. and they're talking about youthful crime, youth crime, and delinquency, and Bill Clinton says, "Well, you know, it's imperative that the American parents and adults in this country pay attention to what their young people are doing." And of course, the natural punchline that followed all that was, "Especially Mr. and Mrs. Lewinsky." So I saw that. I faxed that morning from school, and it was on the Tonight Show that night. And that's the one that just set me off.
And there it is. Wow. What a great story.
And I was always worried about getting the call someday where, you know, we don't need your services anymore, because I really wasn't an integral part of the show. And by any means.
You were right through the end, right?
Right through the end.
What a great sideline, though, you know?
Yeah. And the one, I did get a call, and I said, okay, this is at, you know, the monologue coordinator, Lisa Nelson, if you're out there, thanks for all your help over the years. And she calls and she said, Anthony, I wanted to just inform you that your joke, such and such, was voted the best joke of the week. But the staff would get together at the end of the week and vote on the best monologue joke, and I won it one week.
So look at that.
So that was a highlight.
No, gosh, yeah.
So. See, folks, we are multicultural, diverse. I mean, talk about topically diverse. Here it is.
Isn't it crazy that we live in a world where I can sit in Fredonia,
yep,
type up some jokes, email them, and they're on the Tonight Show the same night.
Yeah. And well, you and your wife traveled to Hollywood a couple of times,
met
New York?
We met Jay in Chicago one time, Buffalo, and he was just in Jamestown 2 years ago. The Lucy Desi Festival.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, he's just a great guy, ordinary guy who got lucky. That's the way he puts it.
And he's down to earth, and a lot of the Hollywood people aren't like that.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic story. Now, how did you come to meet Jack and be part of his life? I gotta ask this because.
No, it's really strange. I'm really shocked because it doesn't happen often, but.
I read his column for years before I met him. So I walk into the White Village restaurant, just half mile from where he lives, about.
Yeah, right.
And, I walk in, and he happens to be sitting at a table looking at the doorway as I walk in. And I nudge my wife, Sharon, I says, "That has to be Jack Cashel." I recognize him from his picture in World Net Daily.
Yep. Plus, you have no idea that I even live in or have a house in that part of the world.
Yeah,
right?
What? Why could he possibly be here?
Of all the gin joints
in the world, right? You're going to walk into mine.
And I'm not a guy who normally is that forward. And so I said, but I told her, I said, I've got to go up to him and ask him if he is Jack Cashel. And I did. And I said, well, would you like to have lunch before you leave town? And that started it.
Yeah. And that's how it all started.
And then we started our little cabal meetings about 10, 12 years ago.
With four guys?
There's four of us. Yeah. Now we had like 22
now
people.
Now we have Doug and Joe Hagner.
Yeah, right. We have celebrities and, TV stars and.
Oh man, I'll tell you.
We have to get Jay Leno to come somewhere.
There you go. Yeah, it was quite the event and we were honored to be part of it. But, all of this is just, I mean, to me, it's almost overwhelming when I look at Jack's book and I read Jack's books, plural, read his columns, and just the improbability of everything that we're seeing here. But Mr. Privateri, you have, folks, I've been receiving a lot of Mr. Privateri's emails and his intelligence briefings, if you will. That kind of, I don't know if I'd call them intelligence briefings, but it has a lot of intelligence to them. And of course, you're a student, if not even and I'll use this term, you might dispute it, but an expert in recognizing biblical significance to events.
Well, I try to connect dots and it's very difficult.
Yeah.
There's nothing that I do is original. I'm just trying to compile what other guys do.
Putting it together.
I put together material like from Steve Cicalani. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Yep.
I know you're familiar with Scotty Clark, Adabu Seven.
And, right.
Matt Patterson from the Daily Crow, and there are others. But your guest, I would have to say it's your show that triggered this interest in me because of the guests that you have, Tom Horn, Chris Putnam, Steve Quayle,
yep.
Stan Dale. You know, those are the ones that really stand out to me. Ted Brower.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what really triggered it. And what I put together is that something looks like something big is coming next year.
And everyone can feel it. I mean, we get emails every day saying we can feel that there's something wrong, but not only that, we can feel that something is coming. And when you had mentioned just briefly before the before airtime, what you had, it kind of did a double take because I'm familiar to some extent with what you have. But if you want to explain it, I mean, folks, listen to this because it's important.
Yeah, the I call it the prophetic significance of 2017, and there seems to be a lot of things converging next year.
Yep.
And this whole presidential election campaign business, there seems to be a supernatural element to it that's hard to grasp. There are forces behind this that are directing our nation in a certain direction, and so that's why I put this together, and I think it'll be kind of interesting to go through it.
Let's go through it. And, folks, again, our guest is Mr. Anthony Privatera. You might be wondering, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? Well, the convergence of events in 2017 is something that, the totality of our guests are in the aggregate, I suppose, that they're all talking about some series of dare I say, prophetic events, certainly some supernatural by definition, I guess, events. And, of course, Mr. Privatera has outlined some things. So, yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah.
What do you have?
So there are certain numbers that you'll see how they're going to play a part in this.
All right.
The biblical numbers of 70, 50, and 40.
Okay.
Okay, 70 is made up of two perfect numbers, 7 and 10. Okay, 7 indicates perfection. You know, like, took 7 days to create.
Yep.
Okay. 10 is the number of completion. So we have a perfect completion of God's law with 70.
Okay.
That's the interpretation of that. 50 usually means the coming of the Holy Spirit.
Okay.
So you'll see how 50 plays out in these coming events.
In biblical numerology
right.
Okay.
40 usually means a time of testing and probation. Okay. Jesus was tested for 40 days in the desert. The Jews wandered for 40 years.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
So,
okay.
1967 was the year of the Six-Day War when Jerusalem was recaptured and put under Jewish control. Okay. Jerusalem came under control of the Jews for the first time in almost 2,000 years.
Okay.
Okay. So, 1967 is going to play a role in this.
All right.
Okay. From 1967, 50 years later, is going to be 2017. Okay.
Right.
So since the Jews stopped counting Jubilee years correctly, we're not sure whether 50 years later from 1967 is going to be a Jubilee year, but it might be. Okay?
Okay.
50 years added to 1967 will be 2017.
Right.
So it might be a Jubilee year coming up. So a Jubilee year, historically, is when slaves and prisoners were freed.
Right.
Debts were forgiven. And the mercies of God would be made manifest. That was the excitement of a Jubilee year.
Now with respect to the Jubilee, it's struggling to remember, to recall if this, do your numbers line up perhaps if you followed Jonathan Cahn, the author of,
The Harbinger.
The Harbinger, right. Does that line up? Is that consistent with his findings?
Right. Like I say, there's an indeterminate question of whether.
I get that, yeah.
Because the Jubilees haven't been counted correctly, possibly.
Right.
Okay.
But we're still in the same area.
Since they were dispersed.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So. The Jews were set free from Babylon after 70 years of captivity. So there's 70. The Jewish temple was destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD.
That's true. Okay. Yep.
Roswell, New Mexico, 70 years prior to 2017, in 1947, a UFO allegedly crashed, leaving behind some very bad UFO pilots.
That's right.
From a galaxy far, far away. Now, this is the story.
That's the story. Right?
That's the story. But do you notice that Hillary Clinton says if she gets elected, she's going to reveal the secrets of Roswell, New Mexico?
that kind of seemed to come out of nowhere. I didn't find any context to that statement.
Yeah, it was one of her first promises.
Right.
So we can...
You know, okay. Bill Clinton, when he took office in 93, he said that was the first thing that he was going to look
right.
at.
Right. So we can count on that.
Yeah, right. Man, it was
one reason to vote for Hillary.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah, Hillary, we're going to hold you to it.
Okay, so... In 1947, the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered.
Okay.
70 years later, it's 2017.
All right.
Okay. The major UN resolution to create the State of Israel was issued in 1947.
All right.
70 years later, 2017. The Balfour Declaration was issued in 1917.
That's right.
To create a homeland for the Jews in the Middle East. So, 100 years later, 2017.
Mm.
500 years before 2017, in 1517, Martin Luther posted his 95 Theses, you know, if that's anything of significance. But also in 1517, 500 years before 2017, the Turks captured Jerusalem.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. And they held it for 400 years. Until 1917, and they lost it to England.
Oh, yes. Okay.
The year 2017 marks the Hebrew calendar year of 5,777. We think that's true, you know, because of the Hebrew calendar.
Right, right.
Once they were dispersed to Babylon, things got lost, and
yeah,
whether the counting is right or not.
Yeah, I was following that from a different, from a rabbi who was very, or from two rabbis actually that were working on this, and that number is a little bit different than mm-hmm. mine. However, you're right because there's some missing years in there and there's some questionable things. Okay.
So if it is 5,777, the meaning there is five is the number of grace and 777 means perfection.
Right.
Repeated three times, it means completion.
Completion. That's right.
The Bible says that lights in the heavens are to be for signs and seasons. And the Hebrew word for seasons is really moedim. Jonathan Kahn brought that
That's
out.
Right.
Mark Biltz, there's another one.
That's right.
Okay.
Four blood moons,
right.
Yep.
And moedim really doesn't mean winter, summer, fall, or spring. It really means divine appointments.
As opposed to seasons.
Right.
Okay.
We read this and we think, oh, it means summer, fall.
Right.
It doesn't mean that.
No.
It means divine appointments. So he put signs in heavens for divine appointments.
All right.
Okay?
That's an important distinction.
Yeah. Now we get into the, now we really get into the intriguing thing here. Jupiter, planet Jupiter has been known from ancient times as the king planet.
Right.
You know, okay, so this goes back to Hebrew understandings of the Maseroth. Have you ever heard of the Maseroth?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And in fact, if you want to just give a mention here right before the break as to what...
Well, the Maseroth is the various constellations that astrology has corrupted.
Right.
But the Jews understood the Maseroth, the constellations, actually tells the story of the gospel.
Again, signs in the heavens... Mm-hmm. Correct? I mean,
yeah.
And it's an important distinction, too. We're not talking about, I don't know, astrology, right? Is that the word astrology?
Right, astrology. No, that's where the planets influence your future.
Right, right. Yeah. We're not talking about that. This is the definitive signs in the heavens, meaning, of course, divine appointments, as you had mentioned.
Yeah, even in the book of Job, Orion is mentioned.
Right.
And the Pleiades are mentioned. the seven star constellation.
Right, right, right. Yeah, okay, so. Okay. Had to stop and think there. Wow.
So these constellations were all identified long before astrology came along.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a constellation. Now here's where it gets interesting. There's a constellation sign described in Revelation 12 that describes a woman clothed with the sun that is giving birth. And here's how it actually reads. This is from the New American Standard Bible. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain to give birth.
Mm.
And then we skip to verse 5.
I'm gonna ask you to hold verse 5 right there, folks. Okay. You're listening. We're up against the bottom of the hour break for getting ready for our final segment. We are so blessed to have with us two awesome guys. Jack Cashel, author of TWA 800, The Crash, The Cover-Up, The Crash, The Cover-Up, and The Conspiracy, and Mr. Anthony Privatera, who is, in my view, just a great analyst. And we're talking here about the convergence of events taking place in 2017 from a biblical perspective. Fascinating information. Please stay with us because you're going to want to hear the end on both counts. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Hagman Report, and we're right back. Stay right where you're at.
We're back with Jack Cashel and Mr. Privatera here in the final segment of this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. In the last segment, we were listening to Mr. Privatera go through some interesting statistics pertaining to the year 2017 and biblical numerology. And I was sitting just right over there listening as my dad was here, and now we just switched chairs, and he's sitting there watching, and I'm right here. So we're going to do this last segment, and let's hear what you got, Mr. Privatera. It's very interesting.
Okay, Joe.
And I'm kind of familiar with this, I think, more so than my father, so
okay,
we can hit this.
Great. So on that Revelation 12 sign that we were in the middle of, and she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain to give birth. And then we skip to verse 5, and it says, and she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all the nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne. So some guys will interpret this as the woman being the church, then some interpret it as being Israel.
And I've actually heard the interpretation that the woman is Mary and the baby is Jesus.
Yeah.
And
all right. Yeah. So it says here, so here's one clothed in sunlight, which makes the possibility that this is the visible church.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The 12 stars, some say, are the 12 apostles, making this the New Testament church.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're saying, some will say, well, the 12 stars are really the 12 tribes of Israel. So yeah, there are different ways to interpret this.
Which is relevant in the book of Revelation. It talks about the 144,000 from 12,000 from each tribe.
Right.
So it can be looked at in a number of ways.
But there's some significance to whatever the sign is.
Absolutely.
And the amazing thing is, and here we are at the crux of the matter, this constellation sign of the woman will rise over Jerusalem next September 23rd, 2017.
Now, this is the astronomy part.
Right, this is the astronomy part.
You're talking about the signs in the sky. Right. You're in Jerusalem, the 23rd of September, 2017, and the night sky you look up, or in the sky you can look up, and you'll have exactly what is described in Revelation 12.
But here's the fantastic part of it. It'll rise with the sun. You won't be able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And this will be on the one day after the first day of the Feast of Trumpets.
Okay.
Okay? That's significant, too. It will not be visible to the naked eye because the brightness of the sun will block out this lineup that you're going to hear about. Okay? Mystery part of it. The only reason we know this appearance will take place is due to the availability of the computer programs we now have available to us today.
An example of that is that everybody can use is Stellarium.
Yes, Stellarium.
Which you can go back to any date in history, allegedly, and any date in the future, and see the position of the stars from any location in the world.
And you can go forward.
Yeah.
Right. And remember, Daniel said in the end times, knowledge would increase, and things of God that are concealed until the end would be revealed. So it leads you to the question, is this one of those things that Daniel was suggesting thousands of years ago would happen? So the truly unique thing about the Revelation 12 sign is that the king planet, here it is now, the king planet Jupiter, we know from the computer programming, it will seem to go into the womb of the woman on November 20th this year, 2016, and it will appear to produce what is called a retrograde motion. It will appear to go oscillate back and forth in her womb area for 41 to 42 weeks.
Okay.
And 41 to 42 weeks is the normal gestation period of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And then it will exit. It will exit what appears to be her womb on September 9th next year.
Wow.
Okay. This is what makes this so unique. Okay. So the modern computer technology tells us that all of these factors, the sun, the moon, the constellation Virgo, the woman, Mars, Jupiter, the king planet, Mercury, Venus, and the star Regulus, which is going to be part of these 12 stars. Regulus is also known as the king star. Mm-hmm. So you've got the king planet, the king star, all in this line, in the constellation Leo, which it'll be part of her crown. Okay. All of these celestial elements have never been in this order before, and they will never be again in this order.
And that
as told us by Stellarium.
And that's fascinating. And never before in history have all these things lined up at the same time in the same place, from the foundation of Israel, again, coming after almost 2,000 years of not being a nation, to the increase of technology and knowledge that we see, which is now increasing at a pace that's is just outpacing itself, to the point of artificial intelligence becoming dominant. You have just the Arab Spring, the tribulation and turbulence in the world, especially in the Middle East, where civilization started. And we see the increase of the immigration throughout Europe and the rise of more terror attacks and the spreading of ISIS. And you see what's happening here in America as this country is continuing its decline through political and spiritual corruption and bankruptcy that we have in this nation as God's removed from the schools. So all these events, including the signs in the skies and in the heavens, are coming to fruition all in the same time period, which makes this so fascinating.
Yeah. So,
we'll have to wait and see.
What do we do? What is anything going to happen? I don't know. But so many things seem to be converging.
It's definitely something to look out for. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating. And is that Matt Peterson, the Daily Crow?
Yeah.
He's been a guest on the show before.
He's been on your show before. Yeah,
he's very good.
He has a fascinating website.
Mm-hmm.
He has a talent or a gift from God that he can put things together that
he has
mind-boggling.
A way with numbers and he has a way of seeing things, like you said, and putting them together in a way that's just fascinating.
Well, I don't know if it means anything, but I was born in 1947, so it's...
Really?
Well, there you go.
And giving away your age there.
Well, not quite. I actually was born at the end of 1947, so I'm only 68 now, by the way.
Perfect completion.
Yeah, right,
year,
exactly, right. That's...
Well, if I can, Jack, what do you think of all the prophecy? I don't know how into the prophecy. I don't think we've talked about this before. But
no, I'm open-minded about it. I really don't know enough. This is all news to me, in a sense. You know, I can't say it's news. I'm aware of biblical prophecy. I just is not a student of it, so I can't comment on it, you know, intelligently. So if you can't comment on something intelligently, I've decided you're better off. You know, just holding your tongue.
He's an expert in other fields.
Or you can do like my dad and fake it till you appear to make it.
And, well, sometimes, yeah, there's that. You know, sometimes if you have to fake things, you do that. But, you know, in fact, you know, just to put in, and that's what I like about Nin's presentation is he doesn't, you don't go beyond your knowledge base. You know, mm-hmm. You don't say what will happen, but rather what might happen. And, you know, because the numbers are indicating it, but a direction, but they're not telling you what you have to think, you know.
A lot of these guys in the world of trying to connect current events with right. prophecy, they say, keep your eye on Erdogan out of Turkey.
Huh.
Standale,
he
says that too.
He said that
quite a while on our show, yeah. And he's been bringing it up, and it's, I forget what the Turkish people were comparing him to.
Some consider him a god.
It was the person who took over Constantinople and turned it into Istanbul, if I remember correctly, and I'm not sure who that is, but there is a, according to Standeo, that he is one of the people we should be keeping our eye on, along with the General Soleimani out of Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. as you know, two potential end time biblical figures. And I believe that we are definitely. When I say in the end times, I mean we're in the season of the end times. It could be 5 years, it could be a year, it could be a month, it could be 100 years.
You know, but we also, are. I mean, I would say in a somewhat more optimistic note, is that American history has been sort of convulsed by awakenings.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
been two previous great awakenings, and I don't know how the numerology works, but on this one was in like the 1750s and 1760s that paved the way for the American Revolution. There's really the without which not of it. There's a profound continent, you know, I mean, continent wasn't that big, but nationwide religious revival. The second one occurred in the 1830s, mostly through the Piedmont area, Appalachia and so on and so forth, which it turned which had been the most feral part of America, the wildest, the most dangerous part of America, into the Bible Belt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now, and when you read the history of that area before the awakening, it was pretty savage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not talking Indian savage, I'm talking, you know, settler savage. So I think that the America's great and final hope now is the third great awakening. Mm-hmm. And I think if it happens, I think it would occur ideally among the Hispanic or black population, you know, or both.
Or the Amish.
Well, the Amish, yeah, right.
It's Chautauqua Rising.
Yeah, right there. That's the fact I wrote a novel about that kind of thing set in Chautauqua County. And curiously, as you know, then, is the western New York State was called the Burnt Over District because it had been swept by the fires of revivalism and evangelism so many times, especially in the first half of the 19th century. I mean, think of all the religions that started here.
John Wesley, I think, right?
Right, the Mormonism, you know, the Millerites, Seventh-day Adventism, the, you know, even things like the Spiritualists, you know, mm-hmm. the Oneida community, WCTU, you know, I mean, there's one movement after another has come out of this part of the world for whatever reason. So you can be the man, you know.
No, I think, you know, the strict rules imposed by the Catholic Church from the Inquisition to, you know, their position as their representation of Christ on earth, you know, through those awakenings. I think that's what, you know, led to these breakaways from the Catholic Church is these historical events in history. And when you think about it, when I think about it in a political context here in America, when we have this election that we do coming up with these two candidates, one being Hillary Clinton, the other being Donald Trump, and if you want to say it this way, Hillary Clinton is really the devil we know, and we know what she will do from the abolition of the first and second amendments to so much more that she promises to do. And then from Donald Trump, you know, he's promising a lot of things. You know, we've heard promises for forever. But the important thing is everybody's looking at these two people as, you know, the saviors of, you know, politics in America. Well, it'll either be like a socialist communism through Hillary Clinton, or there'll be a free market, you know, capitalist revival if Donald Trump gets in. And sadly, people, I think, at their own peril, look at the presidential elections as a way to really change things when the local level is, how you, change things from the ground up. But
right. I'm not sure many people look to either. I know Democrats aren't. I will say this. There's almost no enthusiasm for Hillary Clinton on, that side.
That's true.
If Donald Trump has an advantage, he has an enthusiasm advantage. You know, yeah. All the enthusiasts are on his side. And that shows up in the way their attendance at various events.
Absolutely.
But I don't know that anyone's looking at Donald Trump as a savior in that regard.
I hope not.
No, I hope. Yeah, right. Although I must say, I attend a traditional Catholic church, you know, and an old school Catholic church. And in 2012, our priest was talking to the parishioners about whether you could vote for a Mormon for president, you know, and in that case, Mitt Romney. And he said, you know, under normal circumstances, I wouldn't recommend it, but he is running against, and this is a quote, the Archbishop of Satan. Now, there aren't many Catholic churches that are going to hear that.
No,
you know? But,
no.
But, I mean, in this case, I think we're the Archbishopress of Satan is would not be far off. So I think for a lot of people, it is a question of we know... No, the question, the better, the devil you know? No. We know that devil.
Right.
No, we know it's, I know her much too well, you know?
As of many people do in this country who've lived through the Bill Clinton administration and who've lived in Arkansas during their tenure and as power
right. And,
there.
And if she's not willing to speak to the press while she's running for president,
yeah.
What happens when she's elected? Yeah. Why would she bother, you know?
Absolutely. As we see, this is the most transparent administration in history, according to the media and the, talking heads there.
No, but they know it's not. And it's despite Obama's promises, it's been the least transparent. And but they can get away with it because the media simply hold them to a different set of standards. So, but I think part of what you do, Joe and Doug and Nin and everyone who's... And this is what I think makes America great and still salvageable. And we were talking about, you talked about information and the more information available. This is the first time in history that the average citizen can create his own information empire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it could be a big empire or a small empire, but every person on Facebook is his own publisher now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could take information and distribute it, you know, through email, through Facebook, through other social media. And if you educate yourself, you have the potential to educate others. So the whole rise of citizen journalism where ordinary people, and I include myself, I mean, who have no newsroom to fall back on, you know, who have no great resources to dip into, can make a difference. And I think that is, and that's what's still unique about the United States. There's no country in the world where that's true right now but here. It's not true in Europe. Certainly not true in the third world, but... or in Russia, but that's why I would encourage people not to despair and to look for signs that something good will happen.
What should we think about the internet being turned over to the UN in October? Is that something
There's a lot of speculation about that. Some say since this is something that is under federal control, it can't be handed over to an international organization without an approval from Congress. Others say that this is a turnover to the UN, and some of the leaked emails from the Open Society and George Soros talk about, you know, what they want to do with this internet turnover to the United Nations, as well as through the TPP. They want to create further regulations and shut down. Just the other day, there was just yesterday, there's a new advertising policy on YouTube that is allowing YouTube to demonetize any video that has political opinions or that there's other guidelines.
Right, that right.
They can take away your revenue based on your political opinions now. Mm-hmm. And they're looking for other ways to censor what they feel is the truth. It's actually, well, truth. And the citizen journalism you talk about, you don't see a lot of people that are hoping to land jobs at CNN or Fox News. You see people wanting to make a name for themselves who are looking and hungry for the truth instead of being told what to say and, you know, given a, just like the presidents are, you know, teleprompters with, you know, what you're going to say on them.
Yeah, you know, I spent a day last month with a friend of mine, James O'Keefe, who's many people know, mm-hmm. who's, you know, who as a 25-year-old with his 22-year-old friend dressed as a pimp and a prostitute, brought down a $2 billion organization mm-hmm. on a shoestring. And they have since, you know, James has turned it into a kind of a mini, you know, now he has probably about a dozen employees, and they're all over the country doing stuff. But that's how, this has never been possible before. So okay. I think it behooves us to, I used the word behoove. I promised to go the whole night without saying the word behoove. But I distrust people who use the word behoove. I distrust myself here. Take that opportunity. And regardless of how they try to control information, you know, even in the Soviet Union, they had what they called the Samizdat, you know, and the Samizdat media, which was by any means necessary.
Yeah.
Whether you're cranking out, you know, mimeograph sheets or, you know, writing on, you know, on invisible ink or whatever, you know, the word is going to get out. And now I think people, certainly on our side, are feeling power. The whole alt-right thing, you know, which is a phrase I didn't even know what it meant a month ago. You know,
me neither.
Yeah.
I didn't until about 3 days ago.
Yeah, right. And now it's you know, we're told, but what if they fear it enough that they have to talk about it, you know? Yeah, yeah. Hillary did, and she spent a speech denouncing it.
Yeah, that was strange to see her call out Alex Jones by name.
Alex Jones, yeah. They must have been thrilled.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And it's really sad when you see, you know, so much of what she's denying and fighting against is actually true. She doesn't have a leg to stand on except to call people names and hurl insults and, you know, continue to belittle and cover up and whatnot. And hopefully we do, and everybody in this country gets to see her true colors before the election in November. We got about 7 minutes left. Jack, I wanted to ask you some questions. What do you plan on doing from here? You got anything lined up?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on a book right now with an Iranian dissident who's the leading dissident out of Iran. We were talking off the air about one revelation he made. I can't talk about it on air, but it's major. And it has to do with American politics. And it's an interesting case because this is a fellow who just happened to watch and this speaks to the whole world of information that's around. Just one guy, he just found a thread and he started yanking on it. And it led to extraordinary revelations, just not only about Iran, but about the United States. So that these things are out there. And, you know, Nin was talking about connecting dots, you know, and that's what I consider myself as a dot connector. You don't have to have a major newsroom behind you to connect dots. In fact, mm-hmm. the newsroom will tell you not to connect them because they're going in the wrong direction.
Or some kind of high, you know, university education.
No. I mean, look at all the people who've done well, you know. I mean, Rush Limbaugh didn't go to college. Bill Gates didn't go to college, you know.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg went to a year or two, but you don't need that. What you need is just the ambition and the instinct.
Mm-hmm.
The instinct to tell the truth and to follow the truth where it leads you, you know. It's all out there. The major media do people like me a huge favor by leaving incredible stories on the table.
Mm-hmm.
I should never have written this book. I should never have written that book. It should have been written by someone from the New York Times. But they're not interested, so it's left for other people to do it. And it's, you know, you guys shouldn't be telling the truth. You shouldn't be here. The information you're spreading should be being spread by people in exalted studios getting big salaries.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they're, you know, every night you turn on the TV, I don't care which station, they're rehashing nonsense about the presidential election. They don't even know what they're talking about, you know?
Yeah, you know, every day when we look at the news, I try to, you know, the first thing I tell myself is, all right, what is important that does not have anything to do with Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton that we can talk about?
Yeah.
And so often, more often than not, just about every night, we find ourselves getting sucked right into that, you know, talking about it. But you have to some degree, because there is a lot of deception going on in the media. There is a lot of lies, and there are still a lot of people out there who believe these lies, and their hearts are blinded to the truth. And some of it's spiritual reasons, and some of it is, reasons of ignorance. And we hope that, if we can just reach one person a day and make that difference, that we do it. But, all we do, as we say so often, is just show up. And it seems that everything else falls into place, and we attribute that to the Lord.
That's a big part of it. I've been reading, I'm a student of history, and I actually have a PhD in American Studies, so I'm sort of obliged to be, but I just finished reading a biography of James Madison, very good one, by Lynn Cheney. And then before that, I'd read Ron Chernow's biography of Alexander Hamilton. And when you read the history of the first 10, 20 years of the American experience, starting with 1789, where mm-hmm. the country is in gear, first of all, how vitriolic their debates were,
mm-hmm.
how mean, mm-hmm. in ways that we can't even begin to appreciate today. And when push came to shove, they shot each other,
yep.
Alexander Hamilton shot and killed.
Yep.
And Hillary Clinton is a fairly evil candidate. Actually, she's probably the most evil aspirant for the presidency since Aaron Burr. But there's a precedent,
Mm-hmm.
And you saw then that the future of the nation was a thread, At any point in those first 10, 20 years, everything could have fallen apart.
Yep.
Everything could have, and on a couple occasions it was just on the verge of doing that. It had not been for George Washington, it probably would have for the first 8 years. And after that, it was the grace of God that kept the country together. And Colin Kaepernick aside, I still think God blesses America, And I'm not sure we're deserving it anymore, But I'm confident that we can push on.
Well, actually, I saw a headline that I don't know if the game has already been played or if this is something that's going to be that he predetermined to do, but he did or apparently will kneel with the rest of his teammates as the national anthem sung, and he's given in for whatever reason. And there was a big chunk of what he said that was left out, where he called out Hillary Clinton and her corruption, and he called.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he was. But that was part of it, though. What he said. But that was the part that was ignored. The part, obviously, that was focused on was what he said about, not boycotting the national anthem and whatnot.
And part of his problem is that, I wrote a book on the Trayvon Martin case, for instance,
mm-hmm.
called If I Had a Son, is that he's been fed a steady stream of misinformation, disinformation from the major media. And without hearing the other side, and he getting... And sort of outraged by all the lies he's been told and thinking they're true, he sees a pattern where none existed and overreacted. And, it's a shame because it's a...
Well, I think a lot of us, before we have woken up, as people say, that's the case for all of us, we've been conditioned, we believe things instead of researched and looked into them ourselves. And when people actually sit down and look into what it is that they believe, or sit down and look at something, then they figure out what they really believe and what's really true and not. And sadly, most of the people, are so far gone that they don't even look for the truth of a matter.
Or don't even know to look for it.
Right, exactly.
And in Kaepernick's case, I think that's the case. And I'm sure there's other issues going on in his head, but it's a shame because the real division in America today, I'm convinced, is I just came back from a family reunion. And half of my family will vote for Trump and half will vote for Hillary Clinton. And the lifestyle differences between each half is minimal. We all believe in roughly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that their half has an information flow that is extraordinarily narrow.
Mm-hmm.
And we know their flow because we see it. It's in our faces. Every time I open up AOL, it's there in my face. They don't know our flow.
Yep.
And they've been taught that it's evil and dangerous and
racist
horrible
and
racist,
that, yeah.
Sexist, Islamophobic, xenophobic, sexist, classist, climate change denialist. There's a slander for every thought we think.
Yep.
And that's what they're fed on a steady basis. And after a while, they don't know any better. So pray for them.
Absolutely. Keep those folks in your prayers. As I always say, I pray that anybody who still can be saved does get saved before it is too late. Folks, that'll do it for us tonight. We have Mr. Privatera here and Mr. Jack Cashel, author of TWA Flight or TWA 800, The Crash, The Cover-Up, and The Conspiracy, and Ron Brown's Body, which this is the first time I've seen this book, so I'm going to read this.
Oh, it's been out for about a while.
Yeah, since 04, I think you said.
It's a great read.
And the price goes up every time Hillary Clinton runs for president.
There you go. It's been great having you guys. I hope we get a chance to do this again. And it was great to be able to come to your picnic the other day, and that was a real fun
time. It was a cabal meeting, not a picnic.
Oh, cabal right, meeting. Okay, my apologies. That'll do it for us tonight, folks. Again, thank Mr. Jack Cashel. Cashel, www.cashel.com. Until next time, stay safe. God bless. Have a good night, everyone.